Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm Matt Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal. Ed, we are in the Pennington era, but we are out of the Vulcan era. So how's it going, brother?
Pretty good, man. I got some stuff on the horizon. It'll probably be a part of next week's podcast that I'm really excited to share, but I'll save that for next week. Just something fun that I feel like the sport needs right now. A buddy of mine's working on a documentary. You've probably seen me post some stuff about it, the Neglia Nexus. I just finished talking to him, doing a write up on it, and I did an interview with him. So we'll probably add that to next week's podcast for all extra audio content and video. I'll probably chop them together depending on how things go between now and then. But we got a lot to talk about, man. You were at UFC 298. We got our UFC 300 announcement. So I don't know what you want to get into first. I'm happy to get into either.
I mean, yeah, let's just go to the 300 real quick, since that'll be the quicker topic. Alex Pereira against Hill announced for the light heavyweight title. Kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I it wasn't on my radar, but I guess it should have been. I just figured that Hill would be out longer with his injuries.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I didn't think we were going to see him return so soon, and coming back off an injury like that too. It also makes me question the matchup and how excited I should be for it. You know, I feel like a guy coming off an injury needs like a warm-up fight before you go taking on someone like Pereira
he was the title, he just gave it
oh up. Yeah, I know it. I'm just saying that in general, the matchup against somebody, as Dana White was talking about a lot, it was in the marketing for it and everything, like how fast Pereira came up and what he's done, and I don't know, I just feel like a warm-up fight would have been better. But I think what we're seeing is because people are very varied in their reactions to the UFC 300 main event. And I feel like what we're seeing is the fallout of having too many events and having too many fighters, you know, already busy or coming off of something that they can't be ready for some big mega event. Brendan Schaub's, I saw, and I, you know, we rarely agree with him on stuff because he's kind of goofy or whatever. But he made the point of I forgot Dana White even said that we were going to be blown away by the main event, and I mean the
documentary was going to be made about it.
Yeah, and then I'm blown away not in the way that I thought I was going to be blown away. I'm blown away more like, you know, but with the UFC pay per views these days, like whatever they announce, we could lose that the night before too. So I'm not too keen on, trying to get too excited about any sort of event. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, when the day comes. It's a good card right now. It just didn't give you that big flash main event that I think everybody was expecting. But we said it since day one. The expectation was never going to be lived up to. People were acting like this was going to be like a 10, you know, title fight card. And you know, it's same thing that happened 200. It's all of them, you know. The difference is that this one doesn't have a main event that's like an accumulation, you know, of a storyline coming to an end or something. You know, there's really nothing created this fight other than Jamal Hill, you know, blowing his Achilles and coming back. I guess that's the storyline to get the title against the guy that picked up his title while he was gone. So we can go with that storyline. But, 100 had a lot. 200 would have had one with Jones Cormier. And then, I mean, that turned out to be kind of the coronation of Amanda Nunes that night. But, now we'll see where this one goes. But still got a couple events then. March 9th, we have UFC 299. And then this last weekend, Saturday night, was 298 out here in Anaheim, California. The first of what apparently will be three UFC events in the Honda Center in 2024. Mm-hmm. It was a fun night. My seats weren't great. You know, kind of I was I was up there, you know, so that'll be modified. I'll figure out a game plan for my next event on that one.
I got a question for you. One thing, like watching from, you know, from where I was watching on TV, it seemed like the crowd, I'm not used to a crowd in California kind of, I guess I don't want to say it's being so bloodthirsty or whatever, but there was a lot of points in action that were like, you know, from my point of view, I guess they even said Rogan and Bisping were kind of like, you know, what's going on here? Like, these are good grappling exchanges on the ground, and people were booing a lot. I don't know if you caught that vibe as being in house there, but you're also a little bit smarter than.
Yeah. I don't remember a lot of booing, but I might've just kind of blacked it out. It was a late arriving crowd. I was kind of bragging to a buddy who went to his first event that I thought that the Anaheim crowd would be a cool crowd because I thought they'd be early arriving. It was more of a Vegas style arrival time. You know, you had the upper level fill up, and then that lower level was fairly empty until the main card started. So that was a surprise. I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary crowd wise. It's a big arena. It's not bigger than T-Mobile, but it's oval, so it's got the ends are deep out there. It's a hockey arena, much like T-Mobile, but similar. But I digress from that. Other than that, though, the fights, yeah, I mean, there were some ups and downs. There was some great fights. There was some slow fights, but I think for me, when it was all said and done, the reason I go to these fights still after all these years is for what happened in that main event. I go to these now to see history, to see what I believe eventually will be maybe the next great thing. And I didn't necessarily think that going into this fight. I was kind of thinking Volkanovski would hold on. But, you know, I saw the end of basically of Volkanovski's run. And Topuria looked like a straight killer who has a right hand that's a missile. And, you know, he's got some good challenges. If Holloway manages to survive Gaethje, win or lose, just if he manages to survive, creates a nice matchup for him, and stylistically, potentially a hell of a banger standing up. But you know, I don't know if anything jumped at you at the card, but you know, it was pretty good top to bottom.
I mean, the one thing that jumped at me as far as the main event goes was the concern that I mentioned on last week's podcast, where I said this is going to be the fight that lets me know. You know, if Volkanovski's, you know, the old man jokes and everything, they're fun or whatever leading up to the fight. But I think we got the answer to like what now my concern has been underlined. Too many fights in too little amount of time, no recovery, and the damage being carried like starting to wear on him. Because, I mean, you know, like not to take away from Topuria, but the I feel like a fresher, not so busy Volkanovski probably, you know, would have had a tougher chin, but getting KO'd by before and then, you know, literally coming back. So I feel like he's almost fighting. It's like he's fighting every other month the way he's been. And I like Volkanovski. I wanted him to win, but this was what happened was kind of like the thing that I was worried about. And then when we got the result that we got, now I'm just like, it takes 6 months, dude. I know he wants to rematch and all that stuff right away, but take 6 months, take time.
Have a rematch. He needs to take time off. He's been knocked out twice in a row. Mm-hmm. From what I saw, I don't think he rebounds to become a world champion. Not against a guy like Topuria. It just felt like Topuria was too quick. Mm-hmm. And Volkanovski just didn't have an answer on the feet. I don't think at his age he's going to be able to dominate on the ground like he used to. So moments he had in the past, I just don't see it. I think it was the passing of the torch, which there's nothing wrong with. Volkanovski had a hell of a run. He's a Hall of Famer, an all time great. But I mean, Topuria just put on a career performance. I mean, that's what it was. And, you know, I kind of called his shot. I tapped my buddy on the shoulder and, you know, he's throwing that right hand. And I go, man, Volkanovski's circling to his left. I go, that right hand's there. I go, he throws it. And he started throwing it and he just missed it. And my buddy goes, hey, you called that one. And I go, keep watching it. I go, keep watching. And it was a minute later, you know, that he circled into that right hand and got caught. Yeah. it was kind of predictable, which maybe was, you know, for someone like me just to be able to kind of see that unfolding obviously tells me that Volkanovski was leaving a lot open for someone like Topuria. If I could see it, he's certainly going to take advantage of it. But I mean, I don't know. I went in rooting for Volkanovski, but I went out, you know, giving a standing ovation to Topuria and recognizing that we have a guy. He seems like a really cool dude too. That's the other thing. He seems like a family man, seems real friendly, but he just seems like a straight killer in that cage. And I like the respect that him and Volkanovski showed prior to that fight. That's the stuff I like. I don't need to see, I can see a brutal knockout. I don't need two guys who hate each other. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then are jabbing each other's, you know, going after each other's wives and stuff. Don't need any of that. This is what I want to see every fight. I want to see two guys shaking hands, saying how much they respect each other, and then going out there and trying to knock each other's head off. That's what I want this sport to be.
You know, the co-main event, I don't know what your take on that. I mean, it seemed to be a discrepancy on stoppages or not stop. I'm thinking about the main event. Sorry. But what was your take on the Whitaker, you know, the main co-main event being in house?
I like Costa. And not because he's the greatest fighter in the world, but I think Dana White said it well, that he comes to fight every time. And that's what I said when I saw fight Romero. You just, you know, you see a guy who's taking it seriously. And I think he came out taking it seriously. He landed that wheel kick, which is, you know, anytime you see a man of that size landing something like that, it's different. You know, it's just different. I kind of wish that knocked him out because I would have got to witness a all-time highlight. But I like Robert Whittaker. I said he's a badass dude. I said last week, and he rebounded. He showed. He answered the question that we got on the podcast last week about his chin. You know, he took a wheel kick from a 230-pound man and managed to rebound and win the next two rounds fairly decisively. So I thought it was good. I enjoyed the fight. I enjoyed the fight. It would have been nice if Whitaker would have had a little more, Costa would have had a little more offense in the second and third round, maybe just to create a little bit more chaos. But, you know, Whitaker just picked him apart after that first round. So I enjoyed this fight. I enjoyed the 15 minutes of the fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun. It was a fun fight, but I, you know, for me, like the fight that I was looking forward to, kind of, you know, the Cejudo and Merab. I enjoyed watching that fight. The first round was probably the more exciting round as far as drama, because of that inside shovel left hook that Cejudo landed on Merab. It looked like it, you know, shook it, rattled his cage a little. But I mean, to underline the durability of Dvalishvili, man. I mean, that kid is something else. The fight went as I expected. I mean, Cejudo's tough as nails. You're not going to finish him, but, you know, I think, like, again, talking about passing of the torch, if there was a time that Cejudo said he would, this was going to be the fight to let him know if he go back to retirement, and he took off his gloves at the end of it. I know they didn't give him his time with the mic, but, you know, it's like Dana White said in a post-fight press conference, it's Merab's night, and He certainly capitalized on it.
Yeah, I thought it was a fun fight. I thought it was exciting, pretty much start to finish again. I didn't expect that as much, but I know that the crowd was into it. I know that, you know, it wasn't even though it had some moments of grappling, and obviously there wasn't I didn't hear boos for that fight. So I enjoyed it. Thought it was good. Went like kind of I expected him to grind it out. I thought it was kind of cool to see. All these years later, in the same arena, in the same cage, him pick up Cejudo was very similar to Hughes and Trigg. carried him across the ring and dumped him. And same arena, in Anaheim, so same stadium.
Wasn't Trigg refereeing some fights that night?
And too? He was. And I mentioned that. I actually mentioned that again to my friend. I said, that guy was famous, you know, good, really good fighter. I go, you'll see his highlight later, probably getting thrown and carried across the ring, and then it happened again. So that was kind of cool to see. What else? Anthony Hernandez looked great. I thought his fight was really fun with Kopylov. I could choke. Go ahead.
Just because we were talking about Trigg and all them, it made me think of, I didn't even have it listed on my notes, but now it hit me now. the Wanderlei Silva Hall of Fame announcement.
That was cool.
Yeah, I mean, you were there to hear it at, like what was the crowd reaction? I know they always show the shots at home, but like you being there, like, I mean, Wanderlei, somebody
crowd's reaction is great, but most of the crowd there doesn't truly. Most of them weren't even alive. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, we're getting old, and especially fight years wise, because you know careers were moving on to several generations now of seeing guys fight. I mean, I can't even explain to somebody how much Wanderlei Silva's meant to me as a fan of this sport and as somebody who got involved in it and who's, you know, not a fighter, not a promoter, nothing of that crap, you know, nothing of that, not, I don't mean crap, but no, I'm not, I don't do any of that. I'm just around the fights. I'm a big fan. I help people who I can when it's around the fights. And he's been one of the guys that, I mean, just the story I've told you about hearing about a guy from the Brazilian jungle and then training with Mark Hall when he fought in IVC2 and seeing Wanderlei Silva's name on the other side of the 8-man bracket that night. I knew who he was. I hadn't seen him fight at that point, but I knew the name because I had read articles on tapout.com and inyaface.com, some of the old school websites, Ad Combat, some of the, you know, Full Contact Fighters, some of the 90s websites where you got your, you know, weekly news. You didn't even get daily stuff. So, I mean, he was just, to me, he's what this, in a perfect world, everybody would be Wanderlei Silva's and, you know, and everybody would be knocking each other's heads off with soccer kicks and knees to the head. You know, that's what I, that, you know, there'd be a lot of damaged fighters, but it'd be a hell of a lot fun to watch.
Was there any, like, do you think there was any kind of like odd, like how the acoustics of the arena, because, you know, there was that one with Mackenzie Dern and her opponent, you know, she thought she won and, like, I don't know if it was from getting, because she did get her belt rung and it was at the end of round two. So I don't know if that was part of that where she thought she won or what happened. But
see, here's the thing. I didn't, from my seats way up top and rooting for her, I kind of thought she won. Now, I didn't, it wasn't until I went on Twitter and I saw that I was in the wrong because people that I have respect for were telling me, you know, or not telling me, but posting that Lemos won the fight. So maybe just, you know, in her mind, she had thought she won. And when she just heard the announcement, she just assumed it. I'm kind of thinking that. I don't think it has to do with the acoustics. I mean, she's right next to him. Now, from where I'm sitting, the acoustics aren't great. And so I didn't hear specifically well, but I've seen it. We've seen it in other arenas. We've seen it in other places. I think it's more of a mental thing. I think they just block out everything that's going out. And in their minds, they just think they won and they hear the announcement. And it's just that I feel like that's kind of what it is, more of a, just a natural reaction. And then then your mind computes it. And then they realize that, okay, that's not the name that was said. Yeah. But I already kind of, you know, bursted out in celebration. So I don't know. I don't know what she would say. Names aren't similar. So that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but,
yeah,
I think that's more what it was. I think in her head, she thought she won. She might've been banged up, you know, and not known exactly where she was either. So, you know, she might've remembered a second of the fight. Who knows? But, no, I don't think it was that. I thought that was a good fight. I thought Dern came to fight and that's another one I enjoyed. Like the last seven fights of the night, other than the Machado Gary Neal fight, I enjoyed every one of them. Taffa stepping in for his brother is a great story. He went out there and he got chopped down. De Lima put on a great performance, chopped him down, and then eventually finished.
Also, within 24 hours notice, too. Like, I didn't expect him to do well. Like, I know people were giving all the respect and he was getting a lot of cheers, but it would be cool if he had, you know, if he didn't turn out the way
he had
it did,
a puncher's chance. He went in with a puncher's chance, but he went in against a big heavyweight, a guy who's bigger.
I know he's like a straight kickboxing guy, too.
Basically, yeah. And I'd even say more of just a slugger. You know, and he went out there against a guy whose game plan was probably the same against his brother, was to kick his legs out, take his base away, and then take his power away from his punch. So I thought that was a good fight. There was a couple other good early prelims.
Danny Barlow and Josh Quinlan was a good fight.
Yep.
That was one that I was on my radar because I've talked to Danny Barlow a few times. And one of the things that stood out, they showed it in his the lead up at the home with folks watch it, but he said it when he talked to me, and he said it when I saw another interview he did with I think it was like Fanatics View or something, and then another James Lynch today. But before that, a couple of interviews. Every time you talk to him about what he brings to the cage that the UFC hasn't seen, he kept saying his thing is like he wants to present a new kind of entertainment where it's not just wins and quick knockouts. Like, he's delivering on that. You look at that fight, you know, he had a feeling out round. They fought, and like he took it into the final round before he finished with I knew he was going to finish with a left hand, you know, a hard left hand strike. And when he got that done, I was just like, man, this guy is like, it's I like watching fights that go, you know, quick knockouts and quick finishes are entertaining as hell. But I mean, it's nice to see a fight, you know, kind of build up to a finish like that. And that's what Barlow said he was going to bring to the UFC. And I have a feeling we'll see him bumped up to, like, you know, the main, like, prelims on ESPN. And then I wouldn't be surprised if he's like on a pay-per-view undercard by the end of this year.
Makes sense. That was a hell of a fight.
8-0 now. Yeah. So he's it.
Nakamura dominated Carlos Vera due decision, and Min Yang Zhang picked up a first round knockout over Brenson Ribeiro. Overall, I thought it was a good card. I imagine most people probably thought they got their money's worth. Now, obviously, if you're a Volkanovski fan, it didn't end the way you wanted to. But, I mean, anybody just going in to watch good fights, I think, I don't think you could have, I don't think you left it disappointed. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And that's the thing about this sport. A lot of people seem to, like, you know, they'll huff and puff if the fighter that they're rooting for didn't win. But, you know, you and I have been watching it long enough. Let me know how many times have I come in, or we both come on this podcast a week after a big event. And we were wrong about something, but if the fight was still good and you know, they fought their fight, and they just didn't come out on top. There's something of value to take away from that. It's what these guys live for. These guys and gals that fight, they live for that stuff. And it's kind of why what makes the sport so unique, separate from like your regular stick and ball stuff. So I think it's pretty cool that this card kind of like. It felt like an old, like, it felt like a Fox era UFC card, this card.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I can see that for sure.
Like, not for nothing. I mean, we're going to talk about it, but, like, people seem to agree with me. This UFC Mexico card that's coming this coming weekend, it's on ESPN Plus, and I'm like, yeah, not for nothing. This should be on regular ESPN, especially you're coming off of this pay-per-view. Like, there's probably people that, like, you could still grab this, but, and It's your first time back in Mexico. It doesn't have to be a pay-per-view, but it's still kind of a big deal. Like, this is the next week's main event is like flyweight, like, killers. Like, come on, man. Like, the UFC's the, I don't know. They might be too big for their own good though. No, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm more surprised that Cinco de Mayo, I know it's not a Mexican holiday. I know it's a, Mexican-American holiday. it falls on a Saturday this year, and I'm surprised that they're having UFC 301 on that day as opposed to something like this. I know it's another month and a half off, but I mean, how do you, I don't even understand, I can't even comprehend how you dropped the ball on that. How do you not have a UFC Mexico card on Cinco de Mayo in America? Do you know how many, and have it on regular ESPN? Do you know what the bars would be like?
Yeah.
I mean, I just, I can't even, I don't even know why you'd, so now you're going to do a pay-per-view and all the people you're going to lose out on sales because half the people are already going to be drunk by the time the pay-per-view starts, especially on the East Coast. 10 o'clock, ain't nobody going to be buying a pay-per-view. You're going to be, you're going to be 95 Coronas deep, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. That seems odd to me, but I do like, I like the top two cards of fights of this weekend. I know Raul Rosas Jr.'s earlier, and there are a couple good prelims, but top two cards are really pay-per-view level cards. Brandon Moreno versus Brandon Royval and Yair Rodriguez versus Brian Ortega. Yeah.
Let me bring that up. We might as well, we're talking about.
Yeah, let's just go right into it right now for sure.
Cause that's, I mean, we've had Royval on the podcast, and you know, I think that was he's doing his contender series fight before when he had him. We had him on the podcast,
I believe so.
I mean, the fact that this is all on ESPN Plus, you know, we don't got ESPN. Mexicans don't be subscribing to ESPN Plus. You got to put that on regular ESPN so we can watch it. But I mean, I like what they're trying to do. They're just going about it in a really bad way. But you were talking about the top main and co-main event. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. These are like, this is like pay-per-view level stuff.
That's what I'm saying. That could be the middle of a pay-per-view and nobody would complain. They'd say they're getting two great fights on a pay-per-view card. Mm-hmm. You know, the Ortega returns after it seems like forever. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure how he's still ranked, other than the fact that they're not real, you know what I mean? but
I don't know. What do you,
I don't even know how to really pick that fight. If I'm being honest with you, I would say, you know, this is a rematch too of a fight mm-hmm. that ended in an eye poke, several years ago, led to a bit of a mini riot inside the arena, famous for Bisping, and I think it was Fitzpatrick diving under the desk. To me, this is a fight Ortega should win, but I just, in a world where Yair Rodriguez is the active fighter, mm-hmm. like that's talk about a Twilight Zone upside down. I'm going to go with Yair Rodriguez to finish him. I think Ortega's just been gone too long. And I know he's got the grappling, but I don't think his striking is going to be good enough. I think Yair's just gotten better and better. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pick him to win. I probably picked Ortega the first time, but I'm going to take Yair this time just because of that
situation. And technically, yeah, Rodriguez has like the home, you know, his home base advantage because we know Brian Ortega's Mexican, but he's your neck of the woods Mexican. He's not Mexican.
We all saw the Modelo commercial where he made the choice.
but on the flip side, I feel like the time off might be really good. I mean, if he's coming in refreshed, injury free, and you know, wants something to prove, that kind of makes him dangerous too. I mean, obviously the numbers, if these numbers are accurate, which that's always questionable on the UFC.com website, you know, with what you said about and what we know about Rodriguez striking and the reach and height advantage that he has, that's going to be a problem for Ortega. It was kind of a problem the last time they fought, but if Ortega can use his pressure against him the way Frankie Edgar did when he fought Rodriguez, which I love bringing that up. I think Ortega's got a chance here. I see there's no odds listed for this fight either, so I'm wondering if that's on purpose because of the UFC's erroneous website, or if they're just odds makers are having trouble picking a fight.
Probably erroneous. I'm gonna go with the odds makers being able to do their job as opposed to whoever's running this website. Main event, Brandon Moreno, Brandon Royval. Royval coming off of a title loss to Pantoja.
Yeah, and I know this is a part two, but, you know, when they first went at it, an injury ended that fight.
Yeah, there wasn't a real
This is really their first time fighting for me.
I'm going to go with Moreno. I think he's just better, stronger. I think he'll be able to beat up Royval. I think Royval only real chance is catch him in like a guillotine or a submission, you know, something mm-hmm. in a transition. But I just, as much as I want to see Royval win, I just can't. I don't see him beating Moreno. Not the Moreno that we've seen since their first fight.
Yeah.
I just can't see it.
I see where you're coming from. This one is, I don't want to make a pick because again, we've had Royval on the podcast. I'm a fan of the way he fights, and this is almost like it's funny because they're both named Brandon, and it's almost like they're fighting themselves as far as when you're looking at tenacity and just what they're bringing to this fight, which is, it's weird that their last fight ended the way that it did. The only reason I lean Moreno is because that shoulder thing that happened when their first fight, and then you know, Royval's had some stuff happen in training in between since that fight and now. Like, he's had other things that popped up. So I worry about, I don't want to say the durability of his body or whatever it is, but I wouldn't be surprised if something goes awry during the fight. Not fight ending, but that messes with his movement or you know, he can't squeeze or something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I just feel like too much has happened to his body already. And in that sense, Moreno's coming in with the more iron frame, we'll say. And that's what makes me lean Moreno. But I think as far as like the way that they come to scrap both of them, it's anybody's fight to have. And yeah, again, man, you're fucking up UFC putting this on ESPN Plus. It should be on regular ESPN. But since when do they care about their fans?
I don't know. All right. Well, I think we should move to. There's a couple other big events this weekend.
There's a lot going on this weekend.
There is. Quickly, there is a KSW event this weekend called KSW Epic. It is card that has everything on it. Mamed Khalidov headlining in a boxing match against a guy who's 53-6 as a boxer. Their heavyweight champ, Phil DeFries, is in a grappling match against Josh Barnett. They have a 4-man light heavyweight tournament to crown their next MMA 205 champion. They have a Pride Rules match. They have a no holds barred Valley Tudo. Anything goes other than, I believe, headbutts match. And then they have normal MMA, and they have they have a caged Muay Thai. So that's this Saturday. Also, it's on KSW Epic, I believe .TV is pay-per-view, or, you know, the other way people manage to watch it. I don't know if it's on Fight Network or not this time around. Although a lot of KSW is, but the one, other than UFC Mexico and other than KSW, that
the early bird card.
KSW is early too, but this one will be about simultaneous with that. But we get PFL versus Bellator, champ versus champ, Saudi Arabia,
Riyadh season.
Yes, yes. The
some changes to the card that some folks might not know about. Jesus Pineda is out against Pitbull, so now he's fighting Braga here. It was supposed to be Pineda, but I think he's withdrew due to injury. And I thought there was a moment where it looked like we lost the fight, then we didn't. Now it's this fight. So, you know, there's going to be a open workout. I think, was it today? Tomorrow? There's an open workout tomorrow. Thursdays, they're doing their final media day. Which should be fun, but there's still, somebody said that Bellator is carrying this card, the Bellator fighter names, and I kind of have to agree with that.
Oh, I don't think it's close. I think Bellator is going to carry every one of their events where their fighters are fighting, just because the names. Bellator did better job of PFL of getting their named fighters out there. You know, basically the sheiks in Saudi Arabia said, no, we want Patricio Pitbull on this card. You do whatever the hell you got to do. He's not fighting. They're not going for this week of cancel fight bullshit. You know, they're gonna make sure that shit's not happening. Or if it happens, they're gonna get whoever they want on that card.
Yeah.
Money is not an issue. I don't think so. They made that happen. You know, top to bottom, he starts off with the heavyweight title. Okay, you got the prelims. I do like the presentation on their website compared to what we just came from the
UFC. It's the PFL website, yeah.
You know, we don't see any, I don't know, shadow people and stuff. But main event right now, heavyweight title.
There's a couple.
Ryan Bader versus Henan Fahea. I'm taking Bader to win this. I mean, eventually he's going to hit the wall at heavyweight. I just don't think this is the guy that's going to do it to him.
I don't know, man. I mean, I've seen, you know, when Fajardo won in New York before he got the title, I covered that event, and, you know, seeing both men, you know, up close, and like Fajardo's a bigger dude, and watching him knock out the guy that he knocked out, John Jones was in his opponent's corner, and I'm forgetting the gentleman's name that he finished that night. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. You're talking about puncher's chance against Ryan Bader. Bader's gonna use his wrestling against him, but yeah. Yeah, that's I mean,
I don't think it'll be pretty. I think he's gonna grind him out and pick up the win. Mm-hmm.
And I'd be lying if I mean, folks already probably know I'm Team Bellator all the way for this card. So,
yep. This one's even easier for me.
Yeah,
Johnny Eblen versus Impa Kasangane.
Kasangane.
There you go. it sounds so easy when you say it. I'm taking Eblen 14-0. I'm taking him to win. I don't know how, but I don't see him losing this. Again, there's just some guys that I don't think this is going to be the end of their run here, and I think Eblen has his sights on the UFC, and I think this is one more step to getting there before eventually they realize they don't really have 185 pounders to fight him, and he maybe pulls a Kayla Harrison and just goes.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know why that door is not open to a lot of these people. You know what I mean? They saw it happen, but PFL can't go against UFC's lawyers. So I wonder if that's we'll see down the line here.
But it's also, I think it also has a lot to do with the fighter too, because when you look, you mentioned Kayla Harrison. When you look at what she did during COVID, when the PFL wanted everyone to sit on the shelf, she put her foot down and said, "No, I'm not doing that." And she got to fight in Titan FC and our Invicta, and then she would have had to fight in Titan FC had her opponent not, you know, miss weight or whatever happened with that. But she would have had two fights that year, while everyone else was waiting around. So I think there's you know, our boy Eric McGracken always with the lawsuit coming in April, there was the cards that they could have filled out. I forget the name of those cards that the like Project Spearhead or whatever the hell those cards for the fighters to unionize. He was always kind of like saying, you know, it's up to you to do it. And I think she's a good example of that. So, you know, maybe they just need to, I don't know if it's their management, but I mean, Ali's her manager too. So, but I think it's just her putting her foot down. So shout out to Kayla Harrison for kind of like low key paving the way to show people what's up. This fight with Pitbull, obviously I'm picking Pitbull just because you know, he's been ready, and this guy Braga was not the guy initially. So
no, Braga is 1-1 though. He's coming off a loss against Pinedo, but he beat him earlier, so he's obviously, you know, he's 12-1. But I'll go with Pitbull. Pitbull's on the downhill slide. I think this is a similar in a sense to what we just did with Volkanovski. You know, we saw Pitbull losing another weight class, and then he got upset in Japan and in Ryzen. I think we find out kind of is he back, or perhaps does he get caught, and is this the end of his run? So definitely, I'm glad to see him stay on the card, and I'm glad to I'm just glad to see him on the card.
As long as these guys get to fight, because they need to keep the belt or roster moving if you're going to claim to be a two promotion unit or whatever you're saying you are. Yeah. The catchweight, I mean, still champions, both Ray Cooper's former PFL champ and current Bellator welterweight, but this is at catchweight. Jason Jackson versus Ray Cooper III. One thing I know about Cooper is if he lands any of those bombs early, it could be over early. My interview with him one of the previous seasons before he cut his hair, it's on the YouTube channel. Folks watch it a lot for some reason. It's one of the more watched videos on this channel. It's because that's when he was coming up, before Ray Cooper III became a name because of the, you know, being together with the PFL. So he's definitely got a more than a puncher's chance, I would say, against Jackson, but Jackson seems more than confident in all the media and interviews I've seen him do. He seems more than ready. I mean, he kind of liked the fact that they're doing it at a catchweight was something that Jackson saw coming before we all did. And he had mentioned that before they said it was catchweight. So I think he might have Ray Cooper's number.
Yeah, I think Jackson wins this. I think he's going to be big man in the cage there that night, not having to cut all the way down to 170. And I just think he's a better fighter. Seeing what he did to round out his Bellator run there, or, you know, keep it going, hopefully. But where he was at SO301 when he won the title is he's been on a hell of a run. And I think he's going to make fairly easy work of Cooper. Obviously, Cooper's got a big punch, but mm-hmm. a lot of these guys do. And I think Jackson's just going to take him apart.
For sure. We don't need to know who you're picking in that fight.
Nope.
Nemkov versus Capozzola. I mean, I think I already said I'm Team Bellator. I just wanted to, because we're getting close to this fight right here is the one that I feel like not enough people are excited about. Clay Collard versus AJ McKee. Like it's this, that's like a pride level matchup because it's like a guy from heavy striking background against somebody that's like I don't even want to say McKee's a grappler because he's probably the when I think of a well-rounded mixed martial artist, he's the guy that you could put the picture in the definition.
Yeah, he's a lifetime raised in the world of mm-hmm. MMA, and he's got all the tools. It's a great fight. I think it's hard not to pick McKee. He's 21-1, and his only losses to Pitbull in a controversial decision. So he in any other world, he could easily still be undefeated to have a different judges in ringside. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get tired in that ring though with Collard. You mm-hmm. get tired in front of Collard, he will pick you apart and he will eat up your guts with, you know, body shots and everything. So if McKee's cardio isn't on and if he's not able to finish this fairly early, I could see this it turning halfway through the fight if he starts to fade. But I'm gonna go with McKee because I do believe in a world of MMA he's mm-hmm. he's like a 9 and Collard's more of like a 7.
Yeah, one thing about Collard, man, I say we've had my old editor Joseph Correa runs a Front Proof Media, and I always tell him, you know, because he always talks about the differences. We have a lot of off the record conversations about the differences with boxing and MMA and just the technique and how things have to change for depending on, you know, especially with a lot of the crossover. We have the conversation fairly often, and one thing I feel like Collard is. People talk about the best boxing in MMA. Clay Collard is that guy for me because just when if he plants his feet in front of you and he gets to fire off all those hand combinations, that's when you see like really good boxing in MMA. Like, I don't know if he's just got really hard calves and legs that he can absorb all the, because people think they could leg kick him and then, but he'll stand there and eat the kick so he could, you know, drop 3-4 punches at a guy. And I think that's what makes him so dangerous. So, and I think he has become, because he came from MMA to boxing and then back, I feel like that's what why he knows that. I'd like to talk to him. You know, I'm never in the same space with him when I get to cover PFL stuff, but that's something I'd like to ask him. If is it because he knows as an MMA fighter that went to boxing, does he know that people see him as a boxer and they try to like capitalize with leg kicks and stuff, and if he trains for that? But I mean, I guess he'd be giving away his whole, you know, fight camp if he answered that question. but I mean, you know, that's what makes me, that's one of the things I like about this, where I get to ask these guys these questions just because it's an answer that I want, and I'm sure other people would like to hear it.
There's the shadow man. The shadow.
Yeah, no, that's what I was saying. There's a couple, and it's not any. It's Henry Corrales. Like,
it's like, because it's a late minute. He's fighting in a rematch now against Pico. I don't. No reason for not having a photo there.
Yeah, like, you got this John Castaneda silhouette instead of you know, like
that'll be interesting to see right there if Pico's able to get his revenge.
Mm-hmm.
That was a brutal knockout he suffered at the hands of Corrales.
That's true. That's true.
So he was going for fighting new blood to a guy that, you know, owns one of his scalps. So it'll be interesting mm-hmm. to see how that changes his mental mentality going into the fight.
Yeah. And it is an ESPN Plus pay-per-view just for folks that, you know, last week we were talking about, we weren't sure how you watch this. It's a broadcast partner that we were unclear on. This is definitely an ESPN Plus pay-per-view that you can order. I don't know if it's in collaboration with ordering it through other means, but it's definitely through ESPN Plus because PFL still an ESPN broadcast partner, and using both names, I guess they have to do it that way. So it's an early card. A lot of fights on Saturday. Hopefully you can get your errands done and watch these.
Yep. All right. There also is a Ryzen card on, I believe it's Friday night, landmark card. So there's a ton of action this weekend. Mm-hmm. Check it all out in Kaposa's combat schedule online or on Twitter.
Doing God's work.
Yep. Yep. Fans can follow the show at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMA Hawk 21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbeerzol on Instagram, and Old Head Carb on Twitch. Thank you for listening, everyone, and have a good night.
You too. Thanks, Danny. Call us the chill son of MMA podcast.